Welcome to the debate. Today's show is the Federal News Update, Different Perspectives for Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025. Hello, I'm Alex Johnson.
And I'm Sam Kennedy.
This week, our discussion centers on a series of quite significant recent actions by the United States federal government. Specifically, we're looking at those taken by the executive branch between August 30th and September 3rd, 2025. Now, these decisions, they seem to reflect a pretty clear strategic vision, one that prioritizes, you know, national sovereignty, economic statecraft, and military modernization.
Mm-hmm.
So our central question today is really this. Does this assertive, often quite unilateral approach taken by the executive branch genuinely benefit U.S. national security and its long-term standing? Or does it perhaps introduce counterproductive risks and, well, instability? My contention is that these actions represent a necessary and effective strategy. They signal strength and adapt to a complex global environment, really to safeguard U.S. interests.
And I, on the other hand, will argue that this approach, while it certainly appears decisive, it introduces significant volatility, it strains relationships, and ultimately, I think, it poses substantial risks to both U.S. global standing and, interestingly, the stability of its domestic institutions.
Well, let me lay out my view first. The executive branch's decisive actions during this brief period, they demonstrate an exceptionally clear and assertive posture. It's entirely consistent with a peace through strength philosophy. These coordinated maneuvers we saw across military, diplomatic, and economic spheres, they're not just reactive, they are actively reshaping geopolitical realities and robustly prioritizing U.S. national interests. Consider the relocation of U.S. Space Command headquarters. It's framed by the administration as a strategic necessity, you know, to ensure U.S. dominance in the increasingly contested space domain. This is part of a, well, it's part of a forward-looking strategic realignment directly linked to the Golden Dome Initiative, which is a high-priority, multi-agency program focused on advanced space defense capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, you have the State Department sweeping visa ban for Palestinian passport holders. That's presented as a direct measure to hold Palestinian leadership accountable for not complying with their commitments. It signals a firm stance against efforts seem to undermine peace, and it rejects what the administration calls a Palestinian victimhood narrative. And then finally, the Treasury Department's new sanctions targeting Iranian oil smuggling networks. These intensify the maximum pressure campaign, directly degrading Iran's ability to fund its nuclear and ballistic missile programs and its regional proxies. It serves as a powerful non-military tool to provide leverage for negotiations. So this isn't just a series of disconnected events. It's a coherent, proactive strategy.
While these actions certainly do appear decisive and strong, I approach this from a different angle. I believe the executive branch's assertive posture, particularly its unilateral bent, and the apparent introduction of domestic political considerations into national security processes, well, that actually generates significant friction with allies. It strains international relationships, and it injects unwanted volatility. This ultimately carries substantial risks to long-term U.S. national security and global standing. Take the relocation of U.S. Space Command headquarters, for instance. It raises, I think, significant concerns about military readiness. It potentially sets back the space defense apparatus. It wastes taxpayer dollars. And crucially, as the president explicitly stated, it introduces partisan political grievances. That fundamentally undermines the credibility of national security decisions, doesn't it?
Well,
similarly, the State Department's visa ban for Palestinian officials and passport holders, that fundamentally shifts the U.S. role from a primary mediator. It seems to abandon any pretense of neutrality. This risks the dangerous isolation of Palestinian leadership and civil society, and it also challenges U.S. obligations under the 1947 U.N. Headquarters Agreement, which, you know, generally ensures access for officials to U.N. facilities. Even when diplomatic relations are strained, that's really a cornerstone of international diplomacy. And finally, despite their economic impact, the Treasury sanctions on Iranian oil networks, well, they're criticized for failing to produce a fundamental change in Iran's core national security policies. They might even strengthen hardliners, inflict suffering on the civilian population, and place Iraq in an exceedingly difficult geopolitical position that could push it closer to U.S. rivals. Okay, so let's delve deeper into that first point, the relocation of U.S. Space Command. The move to Huntsville, Alabama, is positioned by the Defense Secretary as a clear step towards strategic advantage in the future. The administration views this as part of a broader, integrated strategy to weave space operations more deeply into national defense missions, and there's a potential cost savings mentioned, $429 million in construction costs. Now, while political comments were indeed made by the president, I would argue that the core decision remains a strategic realignment, focusing on long-term capabilities. The deeper insight here, I think, is that despite the immediate sort of noise, these kinds of decisions are often about planting flags for future strategic posture, preparing for what's next in a rapidly evolving domain, rather than just reacting to today's challenges. The intent is to ensure our strategic hand is ultimately strengthened.
But with all due respect, can those explicit political comments from the president truly be decoupled from a national security decision without fundamentally undermining its credibility? I mean, General James Dickinson, the head of Spacecom, advised back in 2023 that moving the headquarters would jeopardize full operational capability. The Department of Defense Inspector General previously reported that constructing equivalent facilities could take, 3 to 4 years, creating a potential readiness gap. This isn't just, a political reward being headed out. It feels like a significant departure from established norms, injecting partisan grievances into what historically been and should be an apolitical process. My concern is that this decision erodes that critical distinction between political rhetoric and strategic imperative, making future national security decisions perhaps vulnerable to similar criticisms.
I hear your concerns on politicization, and there's certainly valid points to raise. However, the administration and its supporters, they frame this as a forward-looking measure, essential for future dominance in space, with the intent being to overcome any transitional challenges for a stronger long-term position. Look, it's not uncommon for such major decisions to involve various considerations, and frankly, the previous administration's decision on Space Command's location was also subject to political influences. Let's be clear about that. So the real question then isn't just about the immediate optics or the short-term disruption, but whether this bold move ultimately secures a more robust, integrated, and strategically advantageous position for the U.S. in the long run.
That's a compelling argument about long-term positioning, but it really hinges on an assumption I'd question, that the long-term benefits definitively outweigh the immediate, quite concrete disruptions and, importantly, the cost to institutional integrity. The Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, their analysis highlights the urgent need for integrating space capabilities and developing clear rules of engagement for space. A disruptive relocation arguably delays these critical efforts at a time when adversaries are rapidly advancing. Furthermore, the RAND Corporation has pointed out that the uncertainty over the final location has already discouraged civilian experts from applying for jobs, potentially impacting workforce quality and complicating the implementation of effective readiness frameworks. So this isn't just about a transition. It's about potentially compromising current operational capability for an uncertain future benefit, all seemingly driven by an overtly political rationale. It's a really tightrope walk, isn't it? An administration wants to project strength, but if that projection undermines the very institutions that give us strength, well, then what have we truly gained?
Okay, moving from military strategy and the politicization of defense decisions, let's pivot now to the intricacies of diplomatic and economic pressure.
Right, the State Department's visa ban for Palestinian passport holders, it's the sweeping nature of it, affecting not just senior officials, but broad categories. That represents such a dramatic step. And this has been met with widespread international condemnation, including, as you noted, from the European Union. My perspective diverges here significantly. This action effectively dismantles the U.S.'s decades-long role as a primary mediator in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It seems to align the U.S. unequivocally with one party and abandons any pretense of neutrality.
The State Department's action, however, is explicitly aimed at holding Palestinian leadership accountable for not complying with their commitments, specifically their pursuit of legal action against Israel in international forums. This isn't just punitive. It's presented as a strategic response designed to advance U.S. interests by signaling a strong position and rejecting a Palestinian victimhood narrative that the administration believes previously hindered negotiations. Secretary Rubio's department is taking a firm stance to compel a change in behavior, which is, you know, a legitimate diplomatic tool. The deeper insight, perhaps, is that this administration seems willing to shed the traditional neutral arbiter role if it believes that role is no longer serving core U.S. interests or protecting key allies. It's opting instead for assertive protection over, say, balanced mediation.
Here's why I see that differently, though. This policy risks the dangerous isolation of Palestinian leadership and civil society by severing vital pathways for educational, professional, and person-to-person diplomacy. We're talking about things impacting students, medical patients. It could inadvertently weaken pragmatic voices and empower extremist factions who view engagement with the West as, well, futile. Moreover, this action challenges U.S. credibility as a reliable steward of the international system, particularly concerning its obligations under the 1947 UN Headquarters Agreement. The deeper insight, I'd argue, is that by dismantling these established diplomatic channels and mechanisms, we're not just taking a firm posture. We might be inadvertently ceding ground to more radical elements and diminishing the very tools needed for future, effective diplomacy.
Well, while the action may certainly create diplomatic friction, and that's acknowledged, a clear and decisive stance is sometimes necessary to compel change and protect the longstanding U.S. interests and allies. The administration is clearly willing to take a firm posture to achieve specific geopolitical objectives, even if it means a temporary shift in traditional diplomatic roles. This assertive approach, it seems, rejects the notion that the U.S. must always be a neutral arbiter, especially when one party's actions are perceived to be undermining stability and commitments. The focus is on demonstrating resolve and shaping the environment, even if it means incurring some short-term diplomatic costs.
Okay, let's turn our attention then to the Treasury Department's sanctions on Iranian oil networks.
Right. These new sanctions are a critical component of the maximum pressure campaign. They directly target a scheme estimated to generate hundreds of millions of dollars in annual revenue for the Iranian regime. This action is clearly designed to degrade Iran's ability to fund its stabilizing activities, and it demonstrates the effectiveness of non-military tools in providing leverage for negotiations. This is economic statecraft at its most potent, where we're actively using economic tools like sanctions and trade policy to achieve specific foreign policy objectives, directly impacting Iran's ability to fund its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. While critics often focus on immediate policy changes, the real insight here, perhaps, is how these targeted sanctions force Iran to burn through its strategic reserves and reconsider its long-term economic resilience, effectively shrinking its options in a way traditional diplomacy often fails to achieve.
That's an interesting point regarding the economic impact, though I would frame its effectiveness differently. While sanctions undeniably harm Iran's economy, and some models suggest maybe a 1-2 percentage point hit to GDP growth, critics argue they have fundamentally failed to produce a fundamental change in its core national security policies. Instead, they may actually strengthen hardliners within the Iranian regime, they inflict suffering on the civilian population, and they force Iran to develop a so-called resistance economy, essentially a self-sufficient system designed to withstand external pressure and prolonged sanctions. But the deeper insight, or perhaps risk, might be that by pushing Iran towards alternative financial systems with powers like China and Russia, we're inadvertently accelerating a kind of global economic fragmentation.
But in the long run, diminish the power of U.S. financial leverage by pushing the world towards alternative systems that are less reliant on the dollar.
But my concern is that your argument perhaps overlooks the immediate tangible effects. The imposition of sanctions, particularly on activities taking place on Iraqi soil and involving Iraqi nationals, sends a very clear signal. Washington will not tolerate Iraq serving as a safe haven for Iranian sanctions evasion. This pressure is a necessary component, I believe, of imposing costs on adversaries and ensuring compliance with the sanctions regime, regardless of Iran's internal political dynamics or any theoretical long-term economic shifts. It's about denying illicit revenue streams that fuel regional instability and challenge U.S. interests today.
I have to respectfully disagree there.
This policy places Iraq in an exceedingly difficult geopolitical position. It's caught between its powerful neighbor, Iran, and its most important international partner, the United States. I mean, Iraq is deeply intertwined with Iran through extensive economic, political, religious, and security ties, and it relies heavily on Iranian energy imports. This kind of pressure risks further destabilizing Iraq's already fragile political environment and could, maybe inadvertently, push Baghdad closer into Tehran's orbit or perhaps toward other U.S. rivals. We've seen how devastating sanctions were for Iraq back in the 1990s, and these actions revive painful memories. They could potentially create unintended consequences that undermine rather than enhance U.S. interests in the region.
The real insight here, I think, is that such unilateral pressure often generates a complex web of second and third order effects that can ultimately work against the initial strategic objectives.
So to summarize, my thesis, the actions of the executive branch between August 30th and September 3rd, 2025, reflect a clear, coherent strategic vision. It's aimed at protecting and advancing U.S. national security and economic interests. This assertive posture, while yes occasionally drawing international scrutiny and diplomatic friction, represents what I see as a necessary adaptation to current geopolitical realities, demonstrating strength and resolve in a complex and challenging world.
And from my perspective, while the intent may well be to project strength and resolve, the executive branch's approach, characterized by unilateralism, the apparent politicization of critical decisions, and the isolation of diplomatic partners, introduces significant and potentially counterproductive risks. These actions may ultimately lead to strained alliances, compromise military readiness, and erode U.S. diplomatic standing, potentially creating long-term instability and outcomes that could undermine rather than serve American interests.
The period we've examined certainly reveals a federal government acting with a singular purpose and resolve in certain areas. Yet, as we've discussed today, the long-term impacts on military readiness, global alliances, financial market stability, and even domestic policy, well, those will continue to unfold.
Absolutely. Appreciating the full complexity of these decisions requires careful and ongoing consideration of these varied and often conflicting perspectives. There's clearly more to unpack here.